This is a car show, but it's also more, because cars connect us to every part of our lives.
Families, careers, hobbies, and adventures we never expected. So you should have a car you love, and we're here to help. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd, and this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate. Happy Friday, everybody. Paul and I were just realizing that this has been a downtime for us shooting-wise.
Don't say
that. No, it has been. It has been. We have a lot of big shoots we're going to do the back half of the year, but we actually haven't been shooting as much as we normally like to or expect to. But we have so much on the calendar that it's just dawning on us. Like, we think we're busy now. We can't wait to see you guys at many of these events this year. Last reminder, we are going to be at Laguna Seca tomorrow. Hi, Friday. We're going to be at Laguna Seca tomorrow this weekend for in Monterey for a two-day event for Hooked on Driving NorCal. I want to also mention to you, there is that Cars and Coffee happening Sunday morning, March 10th. But then Monday, March 11th, for those of you on the other side of the country, there's a Roebling Road event on March 11th. There's still registration available for that. And then coming up in a couple of weeks, one of our favorite tracks up in the Pacific Northwest, the Ridge where we did Lemons.
Yes.
There's a track day up there on March 22nd. Cool stuff coming.
We hope to see you at one of these events. Like we said, we'll try to make it to every one of our regions this year. I mean, that's definitely the plan.
Absolutely.
So
yeah,
I don't know what sleep is going to look like this year, but on the airplane,
that's okay. Apparently, it's going to happen. So, I'm excited to see people. It's going to be great.
We will keep all of you posted as we move around the country, and we want you to come to track days and or Cars and Coffee too. We have got to talk about this 2024 Dodge Charger Daytona EV that was just revealed.
Mm-hmm.
The Scat Pack and the Daytona RT represent the first ever all-electric vehicles from the Dodge brand.
Here's the key thing. Well, there's a lot of things. There's so much here, actually. I'm a little astonished at the breadth of this announcement. Now, one
huge.
Of the things you have to know is that the Challenger is nowhere to be seen. The Charger, which in the Dukes of Hazzard era that we can all envision, was a two-door. And then when they brought it back, it was a four-door inexplicably. Well, now it looks like that great Charger that we all loved from the 60s and early 70s, made famous by the General Lee, though we can't put a flag on it anymore. There's the General Lee look. It's very much, I mean, if you look at the side of it, it's clearly the new version of that design.
Yeah.
They've called it the Charger. It's now available two-door or four-door. Four-door is coming. But if it says Daytona on it, that means EV, because they're also offering it with a gasoline straight six twin turbo.
The Charger will retain its title as the world's quickest, most powerful muscle car, led by the all-new all-electric Scat Pack, which is 670 horsepower, 3.3 second 0 to 60, and the 496 horsepower Daytona RT.
So that's the slow one.
Those are the electric
models.
Those
are the EVs, yes.
Okay. Then we move over to the gas-powered cars, and those are both the 3-liter twin-turbo inline six. The six-pack high output, the HO, is 550 horsepower, but the six-pack SO is only 420 horsepower.
But the key thing is, it doesn't matter which power plant you get, you are winding up with a more powerful Charger than you had before. Short of the Hellcats, this has got more power across the board than the big V8s that they had prior. I'm yet to see one, of course. We, of course, haven't driven one. We want to. I cannot believe how it feels like Dodge really thought about this.
Okay.
They thought about it.
You mean the whole platform, the whole concept, everything?
Everything they just announced yesterday.
Okay, okay.
The level of thought that went into this. I actually want to applaud them because they know their position in the market. Their position in the market is big, screaming, loud V8s and huge bricks of cars that go very fast. They preserved all of that while going EV, but they didn't alienate their entire market, some of whom they have to know are not going to go EV. It doesn't matter what the stat is. It doesn't matter how the quote-unquote exhaust screams. That's irrelevant. I am not going EV. Well, here is a theoretically more fuel-efficient, straight-six twin-turbo gasoline motor that has more power than the V8 you're going to complain has gone away. There is real serious thought gone into this. I'm not saying it's going to be a success. I don't know. I also think it's fascinating that they decided to put a hatchback on the back of this, which makes it incredibly usable. This is like the Kia Stinger thinking. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like it has a hatch, but it has a hatch. I think this is, in release, they couldn't have done better. As far as the announcement itself is concerned, it remains to be seen how it drives and what's the actual range people get out of these and how do they actually sell. But as far as offering, I don't think they could have done a better job on announcement. Now, execution is key.
I will absolutely agree. I give you that. You're probably sensing some skepticism in my voice.
Yes.
And that is because of styling.
Okay.
Now, first of all, the EV version weighs almost 6,000 pounds.
Of course it is. It's like 1,000 pounds more than the outgoing ones, which were already too heavy.
It's 1,500 pounds heavier than the outgoing ones. They also, Dodge has given the Daytona the largest tire package ever offered on a factory charger. Get this. The Scat Pack trim with the track package gets 20-inch wheels, wearing 305 35s in the front, which are the rears on the Vette Stingray that Todd and I have.
Yeah, okay, go on.
305s in the front and 325s out back. For as much power as all four of these flavors, which just occurred to me, all four of them are going to have to be drag raced down a runway, so you heard it here first.
And they're all all-wheel drive.
All all-wheel drive, they're heavy. 325s on the back. They're going to chew through tires faster than any car ever has. Because of how they're going to be driven.
Absolutely, yeah, of
course. Advertised and marketed, like, just stomp on it.
Well, but that's another thing that's interesting. Is this the first brand that has put out an EV with the demeanor of, we're not trying to save anything, we're not trying to better anything, we're just trying to give you more power? Now, I'm not saying that is what marketing for EVs should be, but I'm saying they are the complete oddball, and that is playing to their market. This is the marketing bait and switch. They're going EV because they feel pressure to go EV. They're not going EV out of the goodness of their heart. And they're not actually going EV because there's more power there. It's corporate pressure. But then they have looked at it properly through the lens of who they are as a brand and gone, well, we need to position this. How do we position it? And they positioned it properly, which is it's even faster and more powerful than it was before. And I actually read this. The exhaust, the Fratzotic, by the way, the word frat boy is in there. The Fratzotic exhaust will hit a decibel level of 126 dB.
That's really loud.
That is painfully loud. Yeah. That is ear-damaging loud.
Yes.
They are so playing to their market.
That's above rock concert decibel.
It's crazy. They are playing to their market under a corporate mandate of, you can't make Hellcats anymore. I'm bringing in the bad news. They were told, you can't make Hellcats anymore. V8s have to go out. It needs to be more fuel efficient. You know that was the mandate. And it has to be electric. So they are positioning this for their market, and I think they're doing a masterful job. And I am wondering, and please send me an email, is this the first time anyone has marketed an EV opposite of the common narrative? This is just, we went EV because it gives you more power. That's the beginning and
end. True. All the rest of the EVs on the planet also claim, like, hey, really quick acceleration.
They're all super fast, but they all have, from Tesla on down, they all have an air of, we're doing this for the planet. And Dodge is going, planet, who cares? It's just faster. Nobody else has done that. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I just think it's fascinating that Dodge is doing that.
They do have a market, and you're absolutely right. I think they've nailed everything that they know has driven sales of the prior generation for making it last as long as it has. They know their market. However, I have a hot take on the styling.
Please.
Not much has changed since that late 60s Charger.
Like, go with what worked.
Not a lot has changed from a stylistic standpoint. Now, how far can you go? They've done some things. But the new Dodge Charger has visually undeveloped surfaces to my eye.
Okay.
I know a lot of people worked very hard on them. But if you take the age out of the last generation and just look at it for what it is, I think stylistically speaking, it is more interesting and caters to, well, it's Challenger, but it's the Charger or just the brand itself.
Sure.
think it actually works better for the brand than the new one does. Because you look at this from a side elevation, I just see bland, boring surfaces. They're uninteresting to look at. There's no character line splitting the surfaces, splitting top to bottom. I see the fender shapes, but they're minimal at best.
They are hinting at the style of the fender shapes of that old 69 70s Charger, which apparently was sitting in the studio during some of the design.
They
process.
Are, and I'm sure we're going to see other versions that will have the giant fender flares that the Red Eye versions tacked on later in life.
Maybe
I'm
they'll do the
sure
double.
That's coming.
The double like punch ins on the side of the Charger. I don't know. I mean, maybe. I don't know another way to describe it. Yeah. That used to exist. That as well. Yeah, we'll see.
A coined surface in there, but I feel like bland, uninteresting surfaces are now the hallmark, not just for this new Charger, but for most car designs on the market. We'll get to the Rivian R2 and R3 in just a moment, but the Cybertruck too. You're just seeing shape.
That's a good
all
point.
You see.
That's
the
a good
surfaces
point. Okay.
Are visually uninteresting. Visual interest, I think, is found at Genesis and Hyundai, especially that new Ioniq 5N. 911s and Caymans are still beautiful. Mercedes has beautiful, simple surfaces. And even BMW body sides and the rears of BMW are visually beautiful and interesting.
I notice you missed the front, but the rest of it's very well done. Yeah. Yeah, I take your point.
Where did beauty go in car design? The Rivian, to my eye, nothing about it is beautiful. It's purposeful. It's very simple. Mm-hmm. The surfaces are actually very complex. And simple is very hard to do, whether you're designing furniture, cars, any kind of product. Trying to make something simple and clean is good. But simple, clean, and beautiful is the third hallmark of a great design. And I don't think the new Charger is beautiful. I think the proportions are odd because that backlight, that back window slopes away, and you know you're packaging people in there. I understand
and
that.
And a hatch, yeah. Uh-huh.
But also, all they're going to do is draw a shut line at the B pillar, and suddenly you've got your Challenger, and we've swapped.
Interesting. We'll see.
The names again, but I saw renderings that denoted a shut line right at the B pillar to give it four doors, and it is big enough and long enough to do it just that simply.
Yeah, I mean,
you don't have to create a separate version like was done before.
Yeah, it's a two-door and four-door Charger, which is fascinating that both are going to exist.
Nothing about this is visually interesting and beautiful. It just looks like from the 90s to me. This could have come out 30 years ago
It has a concept car from the 90s shape. I actually think it's great looking, but I do hear what you're saying.
The front and back are interesting, and I do like that they forged ahead with that front built-in
that
wing
R-wing
design.
On the R-wing, nose, yeah. That's only on the EVs. It's actually a pretty interesting thing there, yeah.
It is, and it does keep in line with the 60s look.
Yeah, yeah.
But really? We're still doing that look?
Well, it is interesting when we didn't do a clean sheet. We went back to the one we know worked. Yeah, for sure.
I'm wondering if every car manufacturer is going to adopt that kind of thinking, or will car design continue to be pushed forward into the future? And I'm not saying make crazy angles and lines and weird things. I mean, even the Cybertruck, it's visually striking, but it's simple and bland and the surfaces are uninteresting. Well, that's because the material they chose.
It, yeah, yeah, sure.
You know, you can only use barbecue grill making techniques when you're building your Cybertruck. How about we go with flat? Let's just do flat panels.
You know what? Flat works.
Flat
works. You know what we could make this into? Something flat. That's funny. I have a couple other things on this Charger.
Where's beauty? Where's the beautiful surfaces striking? Where's that really nice character? The last generation Challenger had a very nice
crease. It did. That's a good point. Yeah.
That was actually better suited and looks still better for its time. It looks old now, but we've all seen it for a while.
Sure. Interesting. Okay, that's good stuff. A couple of the things I want to mention on this Charger that concerned me a smidge. One is, it is 5 inches longer than the last Charger. 207 inches long, which is the size, just so you know, of your average pickup. You can get pickups as long as about 220, 230, but your average pickup is about 205 to 210. This is a 206-inch long car, 5 inches longer than it was before. And by the way, the prior Charger, in case you haven't seen one in a while, not small. Okay? So there's
that thing was huge.
Also, it has drift and burnout mode. Yeah. Of course it does.
Of course it does.
I know the thinking here is it's all-wheel drive, so this will avoid problems. But the problem is, drift mode in this car, that's an electric car, which means you put your foot in it at all and it gives you everything. People that are prone to try this outside of Cars and Coffee, by the way, if you ever come to one of our Cars and Coffee, please don't do burnouts because this is how Cars and Coffees get closed.
Agreed, yes.
But the people that come to Cars and Coffee and do burnouts, generally what happens is they put their foot in it and it starts fine because the engine hasn't wound up fully yet. And then once the engine winds up and they don't take their foot out of it is when they meet a light pole. This is going to be instantly beyond fine. It's going to instantly be all the power. It's going to melt the tires. And people don't understand, it seems clear by all of the videos online, that once your car starts sliding, the way to stop it sliding is to remove your foot from the accelerator. They're going to keep their foot in it, and this thing is going to pirouette into the nearest thing it can find that it won't move.
Ugh.
I cannot imagine the amount of sliding that is going to occur with this. And all of that to say, I love this about what we do.
Okay.
That we enter a year going, I'm not really sure what all interesting is going to happen. And then, ba-boom, stuff like this happens every year.
It does.
Some car that, even though there were the hintings of this, We didn't know it was going to drop this week. It was going to be this thing. We didn't know that January 1st. And this happens every year that we do this job. Some car that we kind of heard in the ether appears and we go, well, we have to drive that. This is right now at the top of my list. The Cybertruck's been there. Now this is above the Cybertruck, even though I can't wait to drive the Cybertruck either.
No kidding. I cannot deal with the side elevation of this car.
It's really bugging you. It's so funny.
Uninteresting.
Okay, all right.
It's just car. It's totally from the 90s. It's like, yeah, concept car is maybe a gift. To this, I'm just not seeing the beauty here.
I like it a lot more than you do.
I'm
okay.
Seeing proportion. Yeah. I'm seeing muscle car, and mm-hmm. certainly needs to be that big. But wow, where's the visual interest on this thing?
Okay.
I got to dig for it. Speaking of visual interest that is lacking, let's go to the Rivian R2 that was also just announced. I'm not feeling the Rivian R2, even though it's going to serve a particular price point.
Mm-hmm.
But when Rivian is teasing spy shots, what do you expect we're going to see? It's going to be the design language that Rivian has introduced.
Yeah.
And it's an SUV or a truck. Boxy means expensive, right? But
mm-hmm.
I'm not seeing beautiful, interesting, unique surfaces. I'm seeing very slab-sided. The features really are front and rear, and they're still very basic shapes.
I mean, it's to their branding. Their
it's
branding
their
has
branding
always
sure,
had this feel. And so that's
what are we
the
all expecting, right?
Yeah, and they desperately need this vehicle because they need something that is more affordable that can sell in massive volume.
If they can stick to the price point. Agreed. It's one thing to claim mm-hmm. the price point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Tesla for a while claimed, hey, $25,000 car is coming. We still
yeah.
don't know where that went.
That didn't happen.
We've
yeah.
got other things to make, like humans dancing in robot suits. And
well, they're busy. They're awfully busy.
So I say the beautiful is still needing to be pushed.
Mm.
Pickup trucks for SUVs for this shape, it's difficult to do. It is a challenge to do. Something that is timeless, but I want to see less severe shapes. I want to see something that doesn't look so robotic and taxi-like. Where's the flair? Letting it hang out just a little bit, just a little bit of show off. Just something that really sets it apart. Because if you took this badge and you didn't have never heard of Rivian and you took the badge off, what would you say this Rivian R2 is? It could belong to almost any car company currently in existence.
And it has that we didn't define the shapes, kind of bulbous concept car feel. I see that. They also talked about the RX3, which is essentially their hatchback that they're teasing. We'll see if that happens. Let's see if they survive. I hate to say it, survive long enough to do the R2 in mass. If they do, that could be the car that actually gets them solvent because you have to mass market to get there.
I'm desperate for beautiful surfaces. I'm desperate for beautiful cars. Trucks, beautiful, not just striking and wow, that's crazy and different.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. ArmorAll, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Whatever car you're looking for and wherever it's listed, you'll find it with AutoTempest.com. AutoTempest.com brings together results from all the top used car listings anywhere online to save you time and help you find the perfect car. It even lets you compare with nationwide results from Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, and far beyond your local area.
Plus, you can now get email alerts for your search, so you're sure not to miss anything. You can even price and find new cars from nearby dealers. That's why Auto Tempest is now the official sponsor of all our test drive videos. We use it to search for new cars or used cars wherever they are.
So when you're doing your drive homework or you're chasing your next family car or you're just browsing so you can see what's out there, go to autotempest.com/everyday so they know we sent you. Auto Tempest. All the cars, one search. Ivor John is writing to us from the UK. Thanks for writing in. This makes me laugh. He said he loves listening to the podcast. Thank you. But he calls it Tall Stories. T-A-U-L. Tall Stories when he speaks to friends about the podcast. I love that you speak to your friends about the podcast. That's what makes me excited. But I think it's funny we're over here telling tall tales. That makes me laugh. He ended up, his current car is a 2015 Kia Soul 1.6 turbo diesel manual. That is a UK car if I've ever heard of it. just
sure.
Break that down.
For
Kia
sure.
Soul 1.6 turbo diesel in a manual is a car that does not exist here.
And he
not
loves it.
Not at all. He loves it. It's been great for him. He said the average miles per gallon on it is about 40 miles per gallon. He loves the car, but he's looking for something new. He has a car allowance from work that if he doesn't lose it, he doesn't get it. That's like NASA budgeting. Remember this with the $300 hammers?
Oh, yes.
Because if they didn't use the budget, they didn't get the budget next year. So exactly. They did things like this toilet seat was $1,000. It's like, why? It's plastic. Because we have to use budget.
Exactly.
Charge me more. Anyway.
This happens all over corporate, well, of course all over does. The world.
He has a £350 per month budget for a car. So he thinks he could sell the Kia for a little bit of a deposit, and he could either buy something outright for about £15,000 or pay a lease of about £300 to £400 per month.
This is where his first world problems start.
I love it.
He's after an automatic and a decent-sized 5-seat SUV. And he says, before you go hating on that spec, know that they suit most lives perfectly. Mm-hmm. And we agree. Space of a big sedan, footprint of a hatch, and easy ingress-egress. He says a bad back from a rugby injury prevents him from slinking into something that's sporty in a cool sports car. But he also says he's been driving manuals his whole life, and it is not the panacea that everyone claims for driving pleasure.
I mean, look, I will be the first to admit there are downsides to driving a manual, traffic being the main one. I do love that you have this, again, diesel manual right now, and you're sitting here going, you know what? I've reached that place in my life when let's just get an auto. And you know what? That's fine.
The Kia Sportage, that is one of those cars that you just open the door and stop walking.
Well, yes, we've talked about it before.
The seat height is just perfect.
This is the thing about SUVs. They are, especially if you have a bad back, it's the best thing ever. You open the door and it's in your butt is at seat height.
You just kind of turn around.
Close the door. Done.
He says a Cayenne would be awesome, but it's far out of his reach. He thinks the Macan might be too small. The Macans, I think, are a little bit deceptive. The boot's size is not the biggest. Mm-hmm. And the back seats are okay, but they're comparable to a lot of cars you're listing here.
Agreed.
Which he says a straight purchase could be a 2016 and newer BMW X1, although I do admit that it does have good space in it.
Yes, that is good. But I don't think the X1, this is to your point, I don't think the X1 is bigger than the Macan.
No.
Usability-wise.
I think it's usable, it's pretty good.
The X1 is on your list, I think the Macan needs to be on the list because I think they're very comparable in space. Yeah, go
on. Other cars he would suggest as a straight buy, the Kia Sportage, not the 1.6, the 1.7, or okay. He's open to ideas here. And then if he went to leasing, he says the Kia Sportage self-charging hybrid is on his list, as is the Volvo XC40, the Skoda Kodiaq, or the Lexus NX.
Is there a better name of a vehicle being sold right now than the Skoda Kodiaq? And it's spelled K-O-D-I-A-Q. That is, I just want to write that down and look at it. The Skoda Kodiaq? That's amazing.
He says reliability, space, and tech are important. If it's a used car, 40,000 miles on the odometer is the maximum that he wants. He's not quite sure about EVs at this point in his life. And I do have, I think, the choice for you.
I've got a few. There's good stuff here, man.
I like your Kia Sportage, and maybe the Hyundai Tucson could be looked at. It is actually good size backseat space. When we drove that Tucson, I think it was last year, it was good in every category. It just worked. It was just good. There's nothing that's beyond compelling, like a Cayenne kind of compelling
but it was good.
It was solid. How do you feel about the Ford Puma or the Kuga? I went looking at those, and I think they're just a little bit outside your price range, even though I like the Puma styling a lot.
The Puma feels like the Alpha Me Too a little bit, styling-wise, which was, I didn't love it, but it's noticeable, and it is built on the updated Fiesta chassis, so it's a cool little car.
Those are £25,000 on the UK website for Ford, but my car for you, Ivor John, is the Mazda CX-30. You cannot ignore this car.
Interesting. Okay, I see it.
You want an automatic, and this is the slightly lifted version of the Mazda 3 hatch, and it feels the least like an SUV. To my eye, to the proportions, to the styling, it can kind of be an SUV, but of all of these that we're talking about, it is the most car-like, but it still has a good taller seat height
that
I think you'll like. It'll still give you the benefits of the things that we love about the Mazda 3 hatch. And it's still kind of car and not quite SUV to my eye.
Okay, I see
that. I
think
the Mazda CX-30 is worth a look. Drives great.
That's good stuff.
Good power.
Yeah, it is
good. I think it's going to be in your price range. I think you'll be able to find them. And you need to take a look at these.
The Turbo is the one that's really worth it. I think that's the good one. Iverjan, I want to say a couple things here. First off, of course we understand the usefulness of the five-seat CUV. It sells so well because it does match so many things that people want. I don't want to climb in and out of it. Open the door, sit down. It has a hatch. It has somewhat decent backseat space. Now, the big bait and switch that goes on in the industry is there are quite a few cars with bigger backseat space than many well-selling CUVs.
Mm-hmm.
And that annoys me. Because
the shape of the envelope of the backseat has been molded and squished.
Yes, because people assume that the CUV has more space in the back, and not always. Now, of course, cargo space for sure. Now, you don't actually say you need backseat space, but it sounds like you do need some cargo, which brings me back around to the thing we already mentioned, and that is, I feel like you brought up vehicles in two different sizes. You've got the X1, which is small, compact CUV, but you've got the Skoda Kodiaq. I love that. It's so great.
Skoda.
The Skoda Kodiaq.
It's fun to pronounce.
Love it. That one is a like a seven-seater. Okay, so you've got two different sizes and price points here. So I'll talk to the X1 first. If the X1 is interesting to you, and it is a very cool vehicle, then you have to look at the Macan. I think they're going to be absolutely awash in sizing.
If you can find one, what, 15,000 pounds?
I mean, you had mentioned interest in it, so I think the Macan is worth looking at. Because you like or are interested in the Skoda Kodiaq, I have to recommend it because I just can't believe it exists. That's very cool, but that's pretty big. But now that we've gotten into bigger sizes, then I think the Kia you want is the Sorento. That's the one with size similar to the Kodiaq, and you may be able to get it for your price range. You had two others that you mentioned that I want to talk on real quick. You mentioned the Lexus NX. Okay, first off, you have to get a brand new one. You can't get a used one of that. You have to get a brand new one because it has the new interface. You do not want the ones with the older interface.
Yeah, run away, for sure.
That will be uninteresting to drive, but it's luxurious. Everything works. The new interface is excellent. There's not a thing wrong with the Lexus NX. I also can't get excited about it. My mother-in-law has one. It's fine. It's perfect. There's nothing wrong with
it. If only she drove a Kodiaq.
Seriously, there's nothing wrong with it. I just can't get excited about it. On the smaller side of SUVs, you did bring it up, and I want to circle back to it, John, and that is the XC40 from Volvo.
You're liking that one?
Is one of my very favorite small SUVs. Yeah. It feels luxurious. It has those great Volvo seats. I like the interface. It's a cool looking style. I think that is a victory on those small. Now, we've driven the electric, and we didn't like it.
But the
normal gas or even the hybrid versions of the XC40, I think, is a superb. Now, it's not something you buy for its driving dynamics, but it's excellent otherwise. I mean, that's the whole thing about all the Volvos. They're really nice to be in. They're great to be in. I think you would thoroughly enjoy that XC40. I'm a big fan. So that's my upper level one. But the ones that are new, Sorento, XC40, I got to back, and Macan, you have to drive. And then how cool, it's just because we don't get it, how cool is the Skoda Kodiaq? I'm fascinated. I just want to see that badge on the back.
Iverjan, I wanted to recommend Jaguar. I mean, that's why they came out with the E-Pace that was so poorly named because nothing is E about
it. It's not electric, yeah.
I wish that were better than it was, but I think it's too expensive for what you get.
Yeah.
Thought crossed my mind, but it is not there.
Yeah.
Not there. Thank you for your email. Really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. Thank you for syndicating the podcast out there and telling your friends.
I
love
tall
that.
The stories
That's
is
awesome.
Great.
Write to us if you've got a debate, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Spring cleaning is coming, or at least it will eventually be coming when all the snow melts. And when that happens, it's time to upgrade your summer fun car. Get it out of the garage, get it ready for summer with upgraded brakes. PowerStop's Z26 Street Warrior Brake Upgrade Kit features drilled and slotted rotors that'll keep your brake temperatures low, and they resist rust as well. Included in the kit are carbon fiber ceramic pads that will give you durable, reliable stopping power without all the nasty brake dust.
Head to PowerStop.com, fill in your vehicle's information into their easy-to-use brake finder, and it will match you with complete kits and components for your car. Join us and the thousands of drivers that have already transformed their vehicle into a stopping powerhouse. PowerStop. Brake upgrades made easy.
Aaron is writing in. He's 29, and he fears he's reached a car ownership crossroads. I have so much to say about this one. This one got under my skin. There's
good,
a lot going on here.
Yeah.
I just love this. He says he currently has a 2016 Focus ST. Very cool. Bought it brand new. He's kept it mostly stock, a few minor bolt-ons like an intake, recirculation valve, no tune, no exhaust. So it's very close to stock, which is rare for those cars. He's had it since new. He has loved it. It was a dream purchase because he wanted a fast forward. He owned it. He loves it. He's wondering what else is out there. Civic Si, Mark 7.5 Golf R. Yes, both of those are out there. Probably ready to move on. You've reached that place where love my car, ready to move on, which is great. Here's the twist. I'm going to read this sentence verbatim. Okay. You know where I'm going.
Yes,
Paul.
I do.
I am anticipating getting engaged this year. And I run into what that might bring with it. Eventual spawn and running around between in-laws and road trips. As a result, he feels like he's at a crossroads. This is the crossroads. Does he resign himself to a good driving SUV, or does he get a manual enthusiast car with a back seat? His budget is awesome. $50,000 to $60,000.
He says loose 60K.
Yeah, he's yeah.
Loose in yeah, the 60K like, okay, range yeah. is like the death knell for your budget, buddy.
you do say looking at Paul. Well, you're looking at Paul while he walks away with your budget.
Exactly.
So anyway, so he's sitting here going, I'm at this crossroads. I want out the Focus. Where do I go? And then he says, oh, and while I'm here, should I just keep the Focus and make it a track prepped car and just get something else in addition to my now track prepped Focus ST that is nothing close to stock? There's so much to say here, man. It's awesome, Aaron.
Aaron, really appreciate your email. You've got this connection with the Focus ST. And you've looked at other cars, but you love your Focus ST and you haven't modded it so crazy enough that you can only use it for one purpose and
true.
One purpose
yeah,
only.
For
Even
sure.
though mm-hmm. you want to track prep it, and I do encourage that. But what I'm reading, I'm trying to back away from your email, look at the high level, get a general sense of what you're saying, reading between the lines here, mm-hmm. and I think you're done with it.
I agree.
I think you've had your time with it. It's been an aspirational car and you did it. And the other ones that you list are kind of similar to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's time for something completely fresh and new. Also rear wheel drive and manual. But you said you're anticipating getting engaged this year. Congratulations. We don't know when that is, but usually the wedding isn't a week after you get engaged.
True.
Right? So there's a usual period of time, a good length of time. You don't have kids yet. You said mm-hmm. eventually, but eventually means what?
Agreed.
2, 3, 5, 10?
Mm-hmm.
How many years? Eventually. Sure, mm-hmm. but they're not in your lives right now. So I am saying sell your ST. Who wants to buy a really nice Focus ST?
Yeah.
Aaron's got it for sale. You list things, the front-wheel drive cars, like Todd said. So I'm saying, you know, if you decided to keep it, then whatever other car you get in addition to mm-hmm. it, it doesn't have to be this X5 45E that you mentioned, which are kind of expensive, and I don't think they're worth it. There's other SUVs I'd recommend. Mm. Most of them have Porsche badges on them.
Weird.
Huh. However, I say it's time for a Toyota GR86 in your life.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
You mentioned a loose 60 grand. That's what I'm playing with. Let's get you a GR86. New, slightly used, doesn't matter. Let's get one in your life for about half of that budget, right? Then you've got $30,000 loosely floating around.
Okay.
But you don't need to spend it yet because you've got a sweet new GR86 that you could take mm-hmm. the track.
True.
You can commute in it.
True.
It will be just an enjoyable, fun, sporty car. It'll give you a new experience for however long until the spawn arrive.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you do decide, I want something else, I still think that GR86 is worth keeping in your life because that will remain the fun, sporty car. But when you do need to add, go look at the new Toyota Land Cruiser.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I'm looking forward for us. We're going to drive that later this year.
We
looking
are.
Looking forward to it. Yeah.
Now look, Aaron, they start at $55,000,
mm-hmm.
but you can keep saving because remember that loose 60? Mm-hmm. Now it's a loose 30 and you're putting that money away and you're adding to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Get your name in your local dealer now.
Yeah. Get on a list.
Land Cruiser and GR86 next to each other in the garage. That is a sweet garage.
That is a good garage.
And it does open up some things because when your family does arrive, eventually, sure, you've got space for a growing family. And that is a great road trip car to the in-laws, as you said. You're going to be doing some driving. You're going to be doing some commuting. But it's not so bland and boring as just any old SUV. It has some off-roading capability, and it might open this door to your newfound sensibility. You've got both available now. You can do some off-roading.
Okay.
And that's also the family vehicle, but you know you can take family camping. You know you can do some light off-roading.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've still got your street car, your track car over here in the GR86. What a sweet garage that would be.
It's cool.
But again, it doesn't all have to happen right now. I think the sale of the Focus does, and then start looking for GR86s. Get yourself into one of those. Get yourself on track. Absolutely get to know that car. I think both Todd, you and I really miss that GR86.
That really is. I mean, lots of things have come and gone in the cars that we bought over the last few years, but both of us, I mean, we look very fondly back at the GR86, which, look at our price of fun piece. You wouldn't think so, but we really do. It's a very good car. Aaron, I have some things to overlap with Paul, but I want to unpack this. It's therapy time over here with me, Aaron. I want to talk this through, because not only was I thinking about this for you, but then it got me thinking kind of philosophically in general for myself and for all of us. Okay, and here's where I'm going, Aaron. I know this sounds really deep, but I'm going to keep it light. You're buying a car for 3 years from now.
That's
why are you doing that?
Yeah.
You anticipate getting engaged this year. When is that happening? And look, I don't mean this to be tacky, but is she going to say yes? Are you going to get married in 6 weeks?
Let's assume.
Yes,
is the answer.
Here's the thing. Oh, the other flip side is she listening and have we ruined it? That's the other part of it.
That's true.
Okay. Does she know you're going to ask her? Have we just blown that on the podcast? I mean, this is a problem.
You're right. We might
this
have blown that.
This is a real problem for Aaron and his fiance to be. Okay. But the point is, to Paul's point, I mean, how fast are you going to get married? If you're going to Vegas, if you're going to get engaged and you're going to run away and elope and go to Vegas, then you might be done by this weekend. By Sunday night, you've been engaged and you've been married and it's done. Poof. You're going to run down to the courthouse because you don't want all the madness. I was engaged for 15 months. I'm going to tell you right now, that was at least 6 months too long. Okay? It was just, let's get there. For God's sakes, are we not there yet? Okay? There was a lot of planning. It was a long time ago, but I was still like, okay, note to self, too long.
You're still holding on to this.
I am still holding on. It was way too long.
Wow.
Anyway, but my point is, it's not going to be instant. All right? So you've got that lag time. And then you say eventual spawn.
Mm-hmm.
Now that is either, oops, we got pregnant on our wedding night.
Yeah.
And then it's 9 months and we can calculate. Okay? Because this is how biology works. Or you're going to plan for it down the line.
Yeah.
So I'm going to guess right now, the fastest this whole process is to you needing a back seat is a year. That's the fastest. And I think it's 3 to 5.
That is light speed right there.
I think it's 3 to 5. Buy a car for your needs right now. And Aaron, I'm poking fun at you, but the truth is we all do this. This is why people buy pickups. And I'm not teasing the people that buy pickups because they need them. I'm talking about, I do a house project once a year. I should buy a pickup. Why? Okay. I like to haul the boat. We go out a couple weekends a year. Really? Mm. Really? People buy cars for that thing they might do sometime or that thing they might need sometime. The one we've heard many times on this podcast is, we have family that comes in once or twice a year, so we need a 7-seater. By the way, there's 3 of us. What are you doing?
It's called a rental.
Seriously. So don't buy a car that you don't need for a time in your life you haven't reached yet. And I'm going to circle back to this.
Because you think that's the need now, and then 3 years later arrives and you think,
needs
have changed.
I'll speak to it right now. This is the place where this really hit me personally, Aaron. I want to speak to this real quick. Life does not turn out like you think. And that doesn't mean it's going to go bad. But if I spoke to the person half my age coming out of college and I told them where I am now, they would tell me I was a liar or I screwed up or I don't know. And I live a pretty incredible life that I feel very contented by, still challenged. There's still downsides. But the life that I have now is nothing I reflected on or thought I would have. Mm-hmm. Not at all. Life takes really weird changes, complications, twists we don't expect. We spend time planning for the 5 years from now. So often, I am so guilty at this. We are so often planning for 5 years from now, we forgot to enjoy the step in life we're at.
Huge.
You're right. All the time. Yeah. I am so guilty of this. My wife and my son are much better about living in the moment than I am because I'm not living here now, today, Friday. I'm living 2 months from now because I'm planning that thing that's going to, you know what I got to do? Go get on the bike now.
Yeah.
You know, I ought to do something today that makes me go, this is my life right now. Aaron, don't get ahead of yourself. Enjoy the place you're at. And that allows you to buy a fun car right now. And I am not going this distance just to be like, it's the Everyday Driver podcast, buy a fun car. I'm just saying you're at a point in life when you can.
That's
so
true.
So do. You're 29, buy something fun. You don't even need a back seat right now. And I'm going to guess your fiancé-to-be drives something.
We hope.
Okay, yeah, exactly.
You're right. Now I'm thinking about this.
We ruined it. She liked me until she heard those guys, and now it's all over.
Whoops.
If these are the guys you listen to, I am out. There's the door. See ya.
Aaron, anyway, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Hopefully not.
Big apologies to Aaron. But I want you to go drive a series of two-door rear-wheel drive cars. You need to drive the MX-5. You need to drive the GR86. You need to drive a Boxster or Cayman, the Z4 and the Supra. Drive as many of those as you possibly can, because none of those really work for the life you're envisioning, but all of them would be fun right now. All of them would be for you and your potential misses to go out and have a great date night or take a fun road trip or whatever, because that's the stage of life you're at. So go drive. I mean, Paul's recommended the GR86, which obviously is on my list, but go at least drive those and say, can I have this now? Versus, well, I'll get it when the kids are gone. What kids? Kids don't exist yet. Really? We're going to get it then? I mean, my dad barely got a Corvette before it was too late because That's he true. Kept putting things off. I've seen this happen. If you really decide, I can't buy something without a back seat. I know the GR86, you still solve that, Paul. But if you really are, after you drive those two-door, two seats, you can't get anything that doesn't have a back seat. Then here's my question. You like fast Fords. Go drive a Mustang. You haven't driven a Mustang.
Yeah, you could.
And if you drive the Mustang, you can overlook the Camaro. And while you're at it, go drive the BMW 2 Series and ideally an early M2, well within your budget. An early M2, phenomenal car.
He could get a competition for his budget.
Probably could. So I need you to go drive stuff that's fun, that meets your life right now. And in a year from now, it doesn't meet your life, you can sell a car. Of course you can. And I'm right back to where you were, Paul, and that is the Focus ST needs to go now, because here's the problem, Aaron. You can't turn that into a track car, and here's why. I mean, you could. The parts exist.
Yeah.
But here's the problem. Yeah. It will never be worth more than it's worth right now. The minute you start altering it for track use, it will plummet in value to the next person. And you'll end up with, this is that tuning out of class thing, you'll end up with a dedicated track car that was never intended to be a dedicated track car. There's nothing actually fundamentally wrong with the Focus ST. It's a good platform. It drives well. It's not like, this is my dedicated track car. Focus ST, is that the one you'd pick? I mean, I know you have it, and that goes a long way, but it's never been worth more than it's worth right now, untouched. So sell that. Get something fun. Live in the right now, because you can.
That's great.
Don't live 5 years from now.
Yeah.
Enjoy where you are. Get something fun. And then when life changes, get something else.
That's fantastic. Aaron, definitely take that to heart. I don't know about you, but my takeaway there is throw caution to the wind.
Right? We are such terrible people to give advice on finances.
Is that what you're hearing right now too? Because I'm hearing just throw caution to the wind, spend all of your 60, get a Supra. I love that idea. No, I'm saying use our driving experience and our love for the GR86. You should absolutely take Todd's recommendation and go drive the Variety, which I do love, but we still come back to GR86. It's still so good. So take our collective driving experience and our love for that car, and I don't think you can go wrong. I mean, I can't say you won't go wrong, but I don't think there's a chance, because it's suddenly a different platform. It's such a different car than any of the front-wheel drive cars and the current one that you currently own. I think you need this. This is the time. Now is the time, Aaron. Spend half. Spend half. We're saving your money.
You've only spent half of a budget, Paul. I am proud of you.
Spend half your budget, saving you money. You get to live in the now, and it's a fun, cool sports car. How can you possibly go wrong?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
As always, guys, great questions. Thank you for writing in on Facebook and Instagram. We occasionally catch Twitter, but generally it's Facebook and Instagram you can write in. Of course, you can always send us an email. EverydayDriverTV@gmail.com is where to send in everything. Questions, comments, criticisms, we get them all. Topic Tuesdays, whatever. But the email is the best place for those car debates and the Topic Tuesdays. Some of your questions become Topic Tuesdays, but these questions, that is reserved for social media. We love that. We also look at our Discord, where all of our patrons, they're awesome. Some supporters, they all are on there, and the interesting commentary comes out of that as well. So please look into that. We do appreciate it. Gwendolyn on Facebook says, "Is there?" He's looking at the pictures you posted of the S-Class.
I missed that car right now.
The 580. Yeah, that's a nice place to be. There's a POV of that coming. He said, "Is there an SUV version of the S-Class?" Yes, it's the GLS.
GLS or Maybach. You could go on up to.
You could
step
you
on
could.
Up.
But the GLS is a phenomenal place to be if you're looking for a seven seat version of what the S Class does. I mean, you're still spending. You're still spending $150,000 either way. But at least in that version, the entire family's there. You got seven seats, and you can really road trip.
When you're in it, all the pain disappears. The financial pain just goes away. You're like, it's
because
so
the seat is massaging you.
Good.
And there's like 1,400 speakers of I don't even know how many watts.
Amazingness. Let's talk about tires. Marvin47 on Instagram says, do all seasons really deserve all of the hate? He gets they'll never be as efficient in the snow as an all-weather tire, but he thinks for a lot of people, all seasons are more than sufficient. Of course, it depends on the area you live, but for occasional light dusting of snow, all seasons are generally enough, and you usually get better performance for the other three seasons with an all-season. Maybe it's just a matter of expectations and marketing, possibly? Marvin, I agree with you. They don't deserve all the hate, but they don't deserve all of the hall passes that they continually get.
That's a good way to look at it.
Well, I've got all seasons. Well, actually, you should consider all weather for the location you're in, for the car you're driving.
Sure, sure.
They don't deserve that. You're right. But again, they don't deserve all this. Like, well, I think I'll just stick with that because they're good enough. You haven't heard about all weathers because it is a step up. Mm-hmm. And all weathers are not the tread wear loss. The tread wear rating, it's not the loss because you might think, well, suddenly they're softer and so they're going to get chewed up a lot more. Only if you're driving the new Charger.
Where everything gets chewed up. Doesn't matter.
305 fronts. Is this sinking into everyone? 305s are on the rear of the Vette.
That could grind down hockey pucks with the power that car is going to have. Yeah.
305s are on the front.
That's crazy.
325s on the... Anyway, tire manufacturers will love that car. Never mind. Anyway, so I'm looking at all weathers as why do all seasons need to exist if all weathers still have great mileage warranties, in some cases 50,000 to 60,000 miles, which is as good or better than many all seasons, and they do better in all conditions. The problem is the nomenclature. You're right. It's been a matter of marketing. When you say all seasons, you think, well, there's four seasons.
It's going to work just fine.
It's going to work everywhere all the time. Well, that's not really what it means. And so we encourage people to really dig in and evaluate what is the area of the country you live in? What is the area of the planet you live in? What are your actual needs for driving? And the reason, Marvin, that I say all this is because when we had our cheap sports cars, the Mercedes SLK and the BMW Z4, we had ourselves a little test. We swapped them in a blizzard. We swapped tires in a blizzard.
You're welcome and we're sorry all at once. It was sorry that to us. Was it was really difficult.
From winters to all seasons. And the difference in how the car behaved was not just a little bit. I was shocked. I suddenly couldn't move.
And the look, candidly, the all weathers wouldn't be as good as the full winters. But if
they're the middle the triple peak,
but if they're the middle ground between the two, that's a serious improvement if you're not going to get a problem going the other way. Yeah.
There's even all-weather high-performance tires.
True, that's true.
So you also can't claim, well, all seasons are only in a high-performance variant. Also not true. To me, it seems like why do all seasons, that nomenclature and that tire even need to exist anymore? Because all-weather can outdo it in every category and better in winter. Why do we even need all seasons?
Watch the tire reviews. That guy's actually based here now. He's done a lot of breakdown of this. He actually took a really cool video. I am promoting it because it's awesome. He took the entire Michelin tire lineup from the most high performance summer tire to a full winter. And you actually do see a difference from all season to all weather. Now, look, this makes sense. The all weather lost a little bit of high performance capability to the all season. But I don't think the average person is needing that end of tire grip.
Right.
They're needing tire grip in the snow much more than they are on the extreme end of cornering.
Exactly. And if you're at the extreme end of cornering, why are you running all seasons?
Or all weathers. Yeah, agreed.
Why are you running any of that category? That's very funny, why are you not into ultra high performance tires or anything in that
something
range?
With the 200 to 300 tread wear.
Yes.
We got to burn through them. We got corners to do,
200 tread
man.
Wear or less.
Ted Theologan has another tire question. He said he was recently coming back from lunch and he was walking through a parking lot and he spotted a set of Nokian WRG4s. Those are all-weather tires on a car. And he was like, oh my gosh, those are really cool tires. He started talking all-weather tires. This just happened to be another question we had. And he was talking to his buddy from work about tires. I guarantee you that buddy from work is never going to lunch with you again. You talked tires to him. He will never talk to you again. But the question from Ted is, do we ever notice tires on cars, like randomly on parked cars? In general, no. I will give you two exceptions. Sports cars I don't think are driven very much at Cars and Coffee. I check the date codes. The other one is when I see something unexpected out in a snowstorm, I check for winters.
I check for winters and I can tell what kind of tires you're on just based on how you're driving.
Mm-hmm.
If you're timid and just tiptoe and don't do anything, I know you're not on winters.
Yeah.
You're not even close to driving even normally. But what we like the most is when we see cars at ski resorts, I do check. I'll lean down like, oh, you're running your ultra high performance summers and what are you doing here in a
ski
resort?
Are you going to get out of the parking lot? You realize there's a hill getting out of the parking lot, right? Don't follow that guy. Anthony's writing in to me directly. He says, all right, Todd. He's right. I've said multiple times that my Elise is a cul-de-sac car. And I've also said that the only place to go more extreme into what the Elise does is a Caterham. And he asks, have I driven one and is this a step too far? I have, and yes, it is. We drove the 720? The Caterham nomenclature is like it has half the horsepower
was,
of the number.
It 650, I think.
Anyway, the point was one of the upper level Caterhams. We drove that a few years back at Audubon Country Club. Yes, that is a bridge too far. I'll tell you a couple of reasons why.
Removable steering wheel?
Doesn't have a top.
True.
Okay, I actually can use my Elise in all weather. I have used it in the winter. I have used it in the rain.
He takes it to car washes, everyone. Regularly now.
Twice in 7 years. Anyway, but the thing is, the Caterham is even more extreme because you are constantly exposed to the elements, which you don't have to be in the Elise. So that is one thing. Secondly, the Elise, while hard to get in and out of, has a surprising amount of space once you're in.
Mm-hmm.
The Caterham, I barely fit in the chassis. I mean, I'm a big guy, but I'm not an enormous guy.
K cars are worse.
They are. I had to squeeze myself down into the chassis, all the way down my thighs. I was against the door sills for my side. Okay, all the way down my thighs, and then so all I was able to move was my ankles. Compared to the Elise is like a luxury car in space by comparison. So I have driven it. For me personally, it is a bridge too far.
Guys, thank you for all your questions. We really appreciate it. Write to us everydaydrivertv@gmail.com and send us your questions on social media. Looking forward to next time. Cheers, everyone.